Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome into Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, how are we doing? What's going on?
Super. Probably better than you. I mean, you've been talking about these 30-degree mornings.
It was rough.
18 degrees.
Yeah.
But you know what? Listen, I'm going to give you some perspective. So in Michigan, this is when you start to know, okay, now it's about to start getting better. This is about as bad as it's going to be, right? Pretty close.
Pretty close to it, yeah.
I mean, here and there. I mean, how many single-digit mornings are we going to have in a given year in Tennessee? A few.
Three or four.
Yeah. Okay. So this is almost as bad as it's going to be.
Sunshine. I like that.
Sunshine,
Robbie. Blowing really early. I could use some sunshine right now. Ryan Porth, how we doing?
Well, apparently I'm low on vitamin D, so I need all the sunshine I can get.
Yeah. I think everybody's low on vitamin D.
So...
That's what I've learned. My doctor told me I was low on vitamin D. Apparently everyone is.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, just you got to suck it up.
I'm trying.
My daughter has been handing out vitamin C and D pills.
Really?
Like it's like a family. She's gotten into the thing. She hands it out every day to us, to my wife. At least, I don't know. Maybe she doesn't care if her brothers have it, but my wife and I, yeah. It's family tradition.
It's impressive.
It's important.
I like that.
Yeah.
It is important. Are you excited for today? Are you ready? For today.
What are you talking about? Vrabel. Oh, Vrabel? Yeah.
Do you have questions in mind?
Well, so here's the thing. Yeah. I have a question I need to ask him. So the thing about Vrabel pressers is a lot of times I don't ask questions. I mean, even like in real regular times, I'll sit there because if I have something I'm writing, then I'll ask the question
sure.
that I need yeah. something. Sometimes I ask the question because I just want to know it, but I'm not a beat writer. I don't cover it right every day. Some of these people over there are writing every day and need stuff. Some people ask questions, I think, to hear their own voices. And you know I like hearing my own voice. But no, actually, I do have a question that I need to ask today. So
good.
I hope it goes well.
I hope it does, too. I think you and I are probably defining well very different ways.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you hope happens.
Oh, I've never looked forward to a press conference more than I am looking forward to today with Mike Vrabel and Joe Rexroad. It's going to be awesome.
Goodness.
Hopefully he's in a better mood today overall.
Everything.
I think a couple days have
gone by.
Everything
will be fine. Yeah.
A couple days have gone by. I have a gut feeling, he's going to be in a great mood today.
That's funny you say that. A couple days have gone by since the awful, awesome win at Indy.
Since the horrendous, dominating win at Indy. A couple days have gone by, and now Vrabel can calm down.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
A couple weeks have gone by since everyone said he sucks.
That's right. And I don't think there's ever been a time since maybe early last season when somebody said Arthur Smith sucked. So maybe he's – you know, we talked about his memory with Brett Kern going back a year. Maybe he's going back all the way to, like, the beginning of – Arthur Smith's 10 years offensive coordinator when he had Marcus as quarterback.
That's a good point. That there were definitely people at that point, I'll raise my hand, who were like, Smith. I mean,
let's be honest. I mean, they were one of the worst offenses I've ever seen.
There were
at that time.
Yeah, there were a lot of limitations. Maybe this is all a ploy to deter other teams from hiring Arthur Smith.
Could be.
You know,
if Vrabel, so, he's a genius.
Reminding everyone said he sucked. Maybe he does. Maybe you don't want to hire him, Detroit Lions.
Yeah, you talked about like Patricia, that's why he was upset. Maybe he's upset because now he knows Arthur Smith could end up in Detroit.
Right, Patricia fired,
a guy
who's for a long time in New England, and now because of that, he might lose his very good OC.
See? Vrabel always two steps ahead.
Chess.
Thinking down the road.
We're playing checkers. He's playing chess.
That's right. Exactly. I was doing some digging yesterday. I wrote a piece at thegamenashville.com talking about how we need to appreciate what we're watching right now with Derrick Henry and how dominant that he's been. And there's always kind of this theme out there that Derrick Henry gets stronger as the year goes on. And I wanted to actually look at the numbers and see how that matched up with, I think, this idea that everybody's got out there. Turns out, he gets stronger as the year goes on. And I'll just break it down by month for you. In September in his career, he's got 271 carries, 1,051 yards, which is 3.88 yards an attempt and 6 touchdowns. Not bad. October, 235 carries, 1,018 yards, 4.33 yards an attempt and 10 touchdowns. And then once it starts to get colder, this is when he really picks up. November, 258 carries, 1,445 yards, 5.6 yards an attempt, 15 touchdowns. And then in December, 281 carries, 1,511 yards, 5.38 yards an attempt, 18 touchdowns. It is officially Derrick Henry season here in December.
Give me the September, 271, 1051. What's the per carry there?
3.88.
8.8. And how many touchdowns?
6.
6. Those are great stats. I may steal those stats for something I'm writing next week. Thank you. You just saved me some research. No, that's
what I'm here for.
That's that tells you the story. Now, of course, that one December, two Decembers ago, wasn't that long ago, that started all this, right? I mean, that's when he became Derrick Henry as we know him. And I don't think there's any – I think it's him getting stronger, and it's probably circumstance of the opponent sometimes, right?
Yeah.
But that's not his fault.
No, but, like, you don't see that with every guy in terms of just getting better as the year goes on. Usually you've got, you know, wear and tear involved, and I'm sure – like, look, I doubt very seriously Derrick Henry gets all the way through the year and he's not feeling something. I mean, I know he's a big guy. He delivers a lot of punishment, but he's got to be feeling something at the end of the year with the amount of hits that he takes. It is fascinating just how much better he seems to get as the year goes on. I've never really seen guys at that position do that. Like, you get more opportunities sometimes because it's colder and the games just go that way sometimes. But he legitimately seems to get stronger both in games as they go along and in the season as it goes along. It's incredible.
Yeah, and, you know, last December – I remember he pulled up at Oakland and he went in the locker room, and then of course he missed a game. He misses one game. And then, you know, hammies can be weeks for people. So he missed one game, comes out and starts on that stretch of unprecedented stretch, you know, 180 plus 3 straight weeks, no backs ever done in the NFL, 2 of them in playoff wins. So yeah. After taking 1 week off for the hammy, he did have the, I guess, shoulder little thing against Indy this year. They pulled him out when they were about second one, right?
What did he miss, like 2 plays?
Right, but those plays were second one, third one, then the punt. And yeah, but yeah, very rarely. And it's amazing because people get any shot on him that they can. And then I think you do get into this month and you have some people who don't want to do that, who don't really want to get in there and throw their bodies in there as they play on, you know, a 3-7 team or whatever. And he does. He gets stronger. I think you're right that the type of games or the weather sometimes. I mean, I'm looking forward to that Green Bay game. You know, that could be his Heisman moment.
It could be. And the other part you brought up there that's interesting to me is, especially in a year like this where – it's been such a grind anyway with COVID, and you've had to really be disciplined outside of football to make sure you're doing the right things to stay on the field. Number one, as more and more teams start to fall out of it, I'm interested to see how that discipline keeps up. But number two, you get into these games against Jacksonville and against Detroit, who aren't going to be playing for anything. I don't know if the investment level to get in there and tackle Derrick Henry is going to be there all the time. And look, their run defenses aren't great anyway. But if that's the case and they're not willing to get in there and pay the price to bring down Derrick Henry, he could have some big-time numbers on his hands coming up.
Right. And can he get a few big ones? You know, I'm trying to think. He's been just great week after week, but when's the last – I mean, he had the 29-yarder against Baltimore.
Yeah.
When's the last 40-plus run, 50-plus run? It's been a while, right?
Probably the Texans game
when he busted the 94-yarder? Is that the
– Probably.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, if he gets 50, most of the time he's getting whatever he needs to get. Like, he gets 50 yards down the field. I don't know who's bringing him down.
He gets the 50 right. And then whatever else is left
whatever
to the
is
end
left
zone.
To the end zone. Yes.
Exactly. But that's pop, you know, you think a couple of those might be possible here in the few weeks. Who did you say? Did you say somebody before the show, somebody was calling for about 1 million rushing yards in this game?
Michael Robinson of NFL Network on NFL Total Access last night. They have like their Hot Take Tuesday segment.
Yeah.
And his hot take of the week was that Browns Titans were going to combine for over 400 rushing yards.
That's a lot of yards.
That's a lot of yards. Titans just ran for 229 at Indy.
If there's that many, that game's going to be over by about 220.
Yeah, it's going to be a quick game.
I mean, I'm thinking, oh, it's just beautiful. A noon start. We don't get the night flex and a two-hour game. Man.
By the way.
What a dream.
Derrick Henry finishing strong. He did this in his Heisman Trophy season, too.
He did.
Where in the second half of the season, I'm looking at his game log, he had four games of over 200 yards.
Yeah.
Including the LSU game against Leonard Fournette, where he basically won the Heisman in that game.
Yeah. You were at that game, weren't you?
I was. Loudest stadium I've ever been in.
That was which place?
Bama.
Yeah, Bama, yeah.
Saturday night, CBS, Derrick Henry versus Leonard Fournette.
That's not bad.
Top 10 matchup. Alabama, LSU, yeah.
You remember when Leonard Fournette was supposed to be like the greatest running back ever? Not working out so well for that guy right now at the NFL level.
No.
Yeah, he's had some moments. Where he's looked pretty good, but yeah, not living up to hype at all. It's amazing too watching Tampa Bay. Like all of a sudden, Ronald Jones is like
stud.
Yeah, like I was like, yeah, Ronald Jones. I mean, he can beat him out. I thought Keyshawn Vaughn was gonna like get some serious run for Tampa Bay this year.
Where's he been?
Well, he's played a little bit. He's been active, at least a few games, and he's gotten a carry, a catch here and there, but yeah, he hasn't done much.
Last time I saw him, Brady just about got him killed over the middle.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen him since.
Yeah.
Which was what, like 2 months ago?
Oh, yeah. It was a long time.
It was a while ago. Yeah, it was a few games ago. But, I mean, Ronald Jones been great. Then you have Fournette. I still think Keyshawn Vaughn has the talent to have a spot somewhere in this league, but we'll see.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in and says, remember, Joe, you got to tell Mike that the fans want to know in your question today.
That's right. Always start with the fans. That's right. Start with the fans want to know.
The fans want to know about Derrick Henry's workload.
Yeah. You just got to soften him up a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. I'll remember that. Hello, Mike.
Great.
The fans want to know.
Would like to know. Why were you in such a bad mood the other day? Oh.
Well, he had a nice day off from
he did
media. Yesterday we got assistant coaches.
He's refreshed.
And, back to the – also, you know, things are changing on the Titans front. The COVID – because of the NFL, COVID – so now we have to have, like, schedules on who's going to practice what day. Basically, you only go – like, I can only go one day a week now. So, it's today.
Yeah.
And so they've cut down the group – who can go watch the practices. So.
And is that just, you know, to try to get extra strict as we get closer to the playoffs here and make sure outbreaks take place?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also just a reaction to what's happening.
Right.
You know, more and more, both in and outside the NFL. So, I think it'll be this way the rest of the way. So,
you ready for some afternoon football today? Steelers-Ravens?
Yeah.
240?
240. Little RG3, right?
Yeah.
See if RG3 can get it done.
Probably not. If he goes in there. I think the Steelers are 10-point favorites. If he goes in there and they beat the Steelers with RG3, forget everything I've said about the Steelers.
That's not going to happen.
Is that your called shot in the week?
Sure.
Okay.
Quarterback controversy?
That RG3 is not going to beat the Steelers.
Could we have a QB controversy if he goes in there and wins today?
I remember RG3's rookie year.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Jeez. That seems like 15 years ago.
It does. Yeah. Seems like a long time ago.
2012, right? Eight years ago? Yeah.
Long time ago. When we come back, some news yesterday in the college football world, more rankings coming out, and also some very interesting comments by Kirk Herbstreit. We'll get to that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, the college football rankings came out once again yesterday. Not a whole lot of change at the top. Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, and Ohio State still occupy the four spots, even though Ohio State did not play this past Saturday. The game against Illinois got canceled following an increase in COVID-19 cases within the program. And then you still have Texas A&M and Florida there as well. So not a ton of change in the college football playoff rankings. Certainly not some change, I think, in the top seven. So as you evaluate these rankings, were you surprised that Ohio State hung on to number four, even though they didn't play and they haven't played a lot of games anyway? What are kind of your thoughts on where Ohio State sits in all this right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could argue against Ohio State at number four. You know, as you go, Gary Barta last night, and I think Reese Davis did a good job of kind of pressing him on that. And I always love it when you get to, basically, Barta got to, I mean, they've got a lot of offensive weapons, you know. And, I mean, look, they do talk about stuff like that. They talk about what is the composition of the team and everything, but it's still funny.
We really like their quarterback. He's really good.
Yeah, you know. I mean, now, look, the win over Indiana is good. And that's, boy, it's a good thing they got that one because, I mean, it's not – I know, like, Michigan State beat Northwestern, but that's not a win that's going to do much for you.
It's also good they got it when they did because Penix out for the rest of the year now, and they're totally different without him.
Totally. So, yeah, I mean, Barta says the quote here is two teams are put side by side, and last night there just wasn't enough there to put Texas A&M ahead of Ohio State. I think a lot of people at Texas A&M are going to argue with that, and I think they have a valid argument. I mean, I think, again, this goes to, and this happens with the NCAA Selection Committee for basketball too, there are preconceived notions, there are brand names, there are names on the front that matter. These human beings know in the back of their head who they are, and it's going to influence it, and everybody wants Ohio State in the playoff. I mean, again, not everybody, but like college football at large wants Ohio State in the playoff.
Yeah. Now, they may not be able to play in the Big Ten championship game. I mean, they've got some problems ahead on their schedule, or if they miss some more games, that's going to be in serious jeopardy to play in the Big Ten title game. Should Ohio State still be in the playoff if they don't get to play in the Big Ten title game, in your opinion?
Yeah, because it's two games. So yeah. It's Michigan State and it's Michigan. And they have to play both to qualify by. I mean, the Big Ten has all these really interesting rules this year. And, you know.
It's hard to keep up.
And I'm sure right now the Big Ten would like to go back and be like, man, why did we put that one in? You know, let's just go with whoever has the better record. Yes, they should be in. I'm sorry. I want the best teams. They're one of the four best teams. I understand people could say, well, they didn't earn it. Well, man, this year's weird. And it's not Ohio State's fault that the decisions were made the way they were made by the presidents of the Big Ten. So I say it understanding the argument against, but yeah, I think they should, unless they do something on the field to lose that opportunity, I think they should be in the playoff. Go ahead, scream at me, you guys. Come on.
What are they, 4-0?
Let me have it.
They're 4-0. Right?
Yeah.
They end up 5-0. They play five games. If they put him in the playoff, I'm going to riot.
Yeah?
Yeah. You can't play five games, not play in a Big Ten title game, and your best win against Indiana and tell me you belong in the playoff. No, thank you.
Okay. Well,
do I think they're one of the four best teams? Probably so.
That's what the committee's
doing.
Is
there a way of proving that right now? No. What have they done?
Okay, but that's what the committee's doing. The committee is – that's why they did a committee.
Sure.
Because – and again – tell me in a given year how many – I mean, you know, some of this is like Michigan sucking this year. You know, that was not expected, right? I mean, Michigan, was supposed to be – well, I didn't expect them to suck
not to
like
this degree, yes.
Certainly that's a quality win for them, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a quality win. It's not their fault. I mean, it's too bad, and it increases the volume against them, but the committee's supposed to put the four best teams in, and – I don't want to watch a playoff that doesn't have them in it because they can beat all those teams. So, yeah, I want them in.
Who's got more quality wins right now, Cincinnati or Ohio State?
I would say Ohio State probably has the best win. But Cincinnati has, well, you'd say two. two that you would definitely consider quality wins, right? So yeah, I'd give them
Memphis,
but again,
UCF, and maybe SMU.
So yeah, that's fine. Look, I'm a champion of Cincinnati. I'd love for them to get it. But like, if you're saying Cincinnati's done this, here's Ohio State. Who do you want in the playoff? I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not picking Cincinnati. I mean, look, I want the best possible playoff, and this is a whacked out, crazy year, and we knew things were going to happen. And you talk about volume of games, and they've said it matters, and I'm sure it'll matter in the seeding. But how many good games does a team play in a given year? How many games actually matter every year? About two or three.
Yeah.
Now, it sucks if they have one that really counts for them. That's tough. And if they don't get to play in the Big Ten Championship game, there's going to be loud opposition to them. But if you're putting me in charge of it, yes. I want Ohio State and Clemson to play. Yes, I want Ohio State and Notre Dame to play. Ohio State and Alabama to play. Yes. I mean, I love Cincinnati or whoever, Texas A&M. Ohio State would thump those teams. They'd thump those teams.
I haven't been all that impressed with Ohio State this year. And a lot of it's the schedule, and it's been hard to generate any momentum, but I've watched them play. I don't know if they're all that good.
Well, they screwed up the Indiana game for sure. I mean, because the thing is, they were on their way to really, like, it was 35-7, right? They screwed it up. And look, that's to their discredit, and that's going to hurt them here too, because – you know, Justin Fields, to me, like, I moved him off my Heisman list that day because, like, you can't make those mistakes.
Right.
And I'll give Indiana credit, too. I think Indiana is good. But it was 35-7, right? I mean, watching that game, for a lot of it, I'm like, okay, yep, that's the Buckeyes. I still think at their best with their full team, I think they got a chance to beat anybody out there. And I can't say that of some of these other teams that are vying for spots. So... sorry.
No faith in Cincinnati. He's come full circle on Cincinnati.
No. Look, I love Cincinnati. I mean, look, I was hoping like Notre Dame would lose and we'd have a chance for that. Yeah, right. But it's not happening, you know? And, I mean, the Texas A&M thing right now, I think you make a case for them to be ranked higher than Ohio State. I think the committee is, frankly, like setting it up for everyone to understand that they're going to put Ohio State in the playoff.
Well, and I mean, Texas A&M just got slaughtered by Alabama, and I get it, it's Alabama, but that game was not close.
Texas A&M does not deserve to be in the playoff when they gave up the last second touchdown against LSU.
That's taking them out right
they
there.
They do not deserve okay. to be in the playoff after that.
Well, then, is this they a had fan, shut is this out a FanDuel LSU, Sportsbook.
Yes, it absolutely is.
Well, that takes Cincinnati out too. Because apparently they can't handle UCF.
Yeah, that was bad too.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they're screwing me on Pigskin Pick'em. That's really why I want them out.
Some very interesting comments made yesterday after the rankings came out from Kirk Herbstreit. We talked about Ohio State, the scheduling challenges that they've got moving forward to get to the Big Ten title game. Here's what Kirk Herbstreit had to say about maybe some teams dodging Ohio State along the way.
I've talked to a lot of coaches around the country that have said they really feel teams are opting out to avoid playing games because they don't want to get humiliated. They don't want to get they don't want to lose with the team that they have. They don't necessarily have too many COVID positives. They just don't want to have to take the field with the team they have and go get embarrassed. So they're basically waving the white flag and saying we can't play. So there's a lot of that that's being talked about around the country. I'm not suggesting, I have no idea what Michigan's situation is. I'm saying they have the power to potentially say, hey, we can't play next week. And there's nothing Ohio State could do about it if they decide to say that.
So what do you make of those comments there from Kirk Herbstreit talking about maybe teams opting out, not necessarily because of COVID numbers, but because they don't want to get humiliated on the field?
You know where Herbstreit's sons play, right?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
So I'm guessing one of the coaches who has talked to Kirk about this would be
probably Dabo,
our friend Dabo, who's, you know, of course, I think still talking about how Florida State dodged him or whatever. I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, maybe that's a thing. I think he's I don't know. Is he trying to, like, reverse psychology Michigan here? Like,
I don't know. He went on later to, like, directly call out Michigan.
Like, step up and play. Like,
step up and play.
Yeah.
And went on Twitter later and apologized, and his apology was kind of weird, too.
I didn't see that.
Sometimes you reach your breaking point, and just with the negativity around college football, I've reached that. And that was his justification for basically calling out Michigan for dodging games without having any evidence for doing so. So it was very interesting last night from Kirk Herbstreit.
Yeah, it is. It's up, like a preemptive strike was what it felt like. Sort of like, Michigan, don't do it.
Well, and you know, people on Twitter, they were like, well, of course, the Ohio State guy is coming in here and talking about dodging because he wants to see Ohio State in the playoff.
Right. Yeah, it's always going to happen.
Yeah.
By the way, you know, he moved here from Columbus because, like, he gets the other side of that, too.
Right.
Like, you're not a homer enough for Ohio State.
Great place
you
to know. Be.
Yeah. I mean, you can't win. I mean, if you've ever listened to Herb Street call a Michigan-Ohio State game, which he's done a lot, look, I'm sorry, but he is absolutely as down the middle as you can be.
He is.
A pro. But, yeah, it's a little weird to put it out there like that. Again, I think Dabo's got to be one of those coaches, and maybe that's true. I don't know. I can't imagine. It's interesting. I hadn't even thought of it before he said it, but – I mean, Harbaugh.
Like, if you're Michigan,
has had very little good things. I mean, like, just be like, hey, well, sorry, guys,
can't play this one.
I mean,
well, it would also keep them out of the title game, which is
that's the key.
The only way that Michigan can stick it to Ohio State this year.
Exactly, keep them out of the title game. Michigan would not have to be humiliated, which they would be in that game. I mean, there's some upside to doing it, you know.
We would like to think people are better than that, though, right?
Yeah.
But I think we know deep down, maybe sometimes they're not.
Well, I mean, the Michigan players, do they want to play this game? I would think so.
I would hope so. If not, you need to go find some new players.
But it's been a miserable season. I mean, there's some teams that have to at some point kind of face reality of what they are, and I don't know. I would hope that would not be a thing and that they would play the game if they can play the game. But I think Herb Street kind of threw it out there to sort of, I guess, bring it to light and increase the pressure. In the meantime, people are mad at him.
When we come back, we'll dive into the Vols. Are we rushing to judgment on Jeremy Pruitt too soon? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you. On this Wednesday morning, let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Brian in Portland texts in, if you check Kirk Herbstreit's apology in the comment section on Twitter, there's actually a lot of Michigan fans that agree with him. It's a disgrace to college football. If anybody is doing this, they need to be fined and have a postseason ban if this is the truth. And I'm a Tennessee Vol fan, so I don't really have a dog in this fight.
Postseason ban?
I like it.
Dang. Okay.
Can't be just not playing games because you don't want to get embarrassed.
Yeah.
If that was the case, Tennessee would have stopped after week four.
I mean, Vanderbilt's going to Georgia this week. You know? I mean, there's some games that you know aren't going to go well for you.
Yeah.
And you play them. So.
Just got to power through it.
Suspend Harbaugh for the season.
Yeah.
Take away his draft picks.
Just take him out.
Meanwhile, like, what has Harbaugh said? Like, he's just sitting here like, what?
Like, I didn't do this.
I'm just sitting here trying to coach my team. You guys are all, like, mad at me because I haven't done anything.
That's what happens when you start losing. You get mad at coaches for everything. And a lot of Tennessee fans feel that way right now Jeremy Pruitt. I'm pretty good.
Good segue.
I like that. That was good. Yesterday, I had former Vols running back Gerald Riggs Jr. join me on the Power T podcast, and he offered some interesting thoughts on Jeremy Pruitt and the state of this Tennessee Vols football program. Are we rushing to judgment on Jeremy Pruitt? Here's what Gerald Riggs had to say.
You know, I think Jeremy's done a pretty good job. You know, I think, you know, he's recruited well. He's assembled, you know, a pretty good staff. It just takes time. It takes time. And I mean, and it wasn't like he came into a great situation either. So, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, we live in a now society. Everybody wants everything now. You know, we have seen other programs be able to turn around and have some success pretty rapidly. A lot of times that isn't necessarily sustained. But, at the same time, I think he's doing a good job. It's easy to jump on the guy right now because, you know, hey, we're in the midst of a five-game losing streak and, you know, you've got recruits that are decommitting and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, yeah, 3 years seems like a long time given the way that things go now and what everybody expects of us now. But when you look at it from a standpoint of, you know, in football life, that's really not a long time.
So what do you make of those comments there from Gerald Riggs Jr. that maybe Tennessee fans jumping off a little too quickly on Jeremy Pruitt's ship and maybe some more time needed for Pruitt to build this program? 3 years seems like a while, but maybe not as long as we would think.
Well, I want to know what you think about it. You are out on Jeremy Pruitt. You've said that on the record. Did he change your mind at all?
No.
Okay. I think everything he said makes sense. I just think it's one of those things where you can know someone's wrong before like 5 years. You can know that. I just don't know that we 100% know that now. I can't sit here and say 100% I know Jeremy Pruitt's not right. Now, it's trending that way. I don't think anybody can deny that. And it's trending that way. This has been a very disappointing season. But it's year three. I mean, it's you know, the timeline is what it is. You can't change that. So I think it's very possible and reasonable that this could be another big staff change, and then next year is just sort of like everyone's all over him and it's going bad. I mean, look, I said the same stuff about Butch Jones. I did. In year whatever that was, you know, 2017 early, it's like, well, hold on. You know, they won the Georgia Tech game. They started going really bad. And then at some point it's like, okay, yeah, it's over. You started to feel like it was over with the loss to Vanderbilt the year before, but that was year five, right? Or that was year four.
That was four.
That was year four. So that the timeline was enough there. I mean, we see coaches fired after 1 and 2 years now. So it's not like it's absolutely you cannot do it, you cannot move on. I'm just saying I'm not 100% convinced that he's going to fail. The problem for him is you better show something very different very fast.
That's the thing. Like, I agree with what Gerald Riggs is saying, that sometimes you don't have to have everything figured out after 3 years. And I think a lot of fans now operate under the assumption of, hey, if you're not trending towards playing in an SEC title game in year three, then you've got a problem. And I think that maybe does a disservice to how bad this program was when Jeremy Pruitt took it over. So I get all that. But you also have to show some signs of positivity. And right now, to me, they're going the other way. Like, they're getting worse than they were at this time last year. And that's a problem. And look, the quarterback has a lot to do with that. And we're going to talk about that coming up and what they should do at that position moving forward here. But you've lost 5 games in a row. And unfortunately for you, like, the schedule, it is what it is. You don't have non-conference games to break that up and stop the bleeding a little bit. So it is a different year from that standpoint. But to me, they're getting worse, and that's why I was out. And I talked about the Arkansas game, you know, Sam Pittman coming in year one with a horrible football program and really taking you to the woodshed in the second half of that game. That's a problem to me. Like, a first-year coach at a program that should be pretty inferior to Tennessee coming in and being able to do that, that is not a very good sign, and that goes back to what you said. Sometimes before year five, you can know that you've hired the wrong guy. And to me, they've got the wrong guy.
Yeah, well, they may. I mean, look, like if you said, you know, what's your like confidence level right now that Jeremy Pruitt is the right guy, you know, I'd probably go something like 25-75. You know? But it's not zero. And I don't know. I mean, I guess this year, you know, if they lose to Vanderbilt, that number gets lower for sure. But I do think that although the defense has also been disappointing, I mean, to me it comes down so much to quarterback and so much to an offense that has a lot of talent. That's the thing that's disappointing is they have pros in the offensive line. Yep. Yes, they lost veteran receivers, but they have good talent there.
Josh Palmer is an NFL receiver, and he has largely been a ghost in the last 4 or 5 weeks to no fault of his own. They just can't get him the ball.
And Velus Jones is talented and is barely a part of anything. And, you know, Jalin Hyatt is a freshman, and they've tried to get him the ball, but the whole thing is so stodgy and just not good. And so I think the argument for Pruitt is probably an argument against Chaney. And I know a lot of people will be like, well, that's – oh, great. So you're going to make your 13th, 14th, 15th staff change, and then that's just going to be fine. Hey, it's – look, a lot of people are going to be upset if Jeremy Pruitt's the coach next year. I think he will be. But next year is going to be very tough for him if that's how it goes because, like, you have to really turn things around quickly.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I still think he's going to be back next year. He'll be in year four, and I think that just kind of is what it is.
for people that may be upset about staff changes, I understand it. There's been a lot of it. But if you think they're coming back into next year and looking the same as they do right now, I got news for you. They're not. There will be some changes.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, they obviously haven't developed quarterbacks. They didn't get, I mean, the guys, let's forget Harrison Bailey. You know, first of all, let's hope they don't screw him up. But the guys behind Jarrett Garantano, I mean, there's no discernible progress there. Garantano himself, veteran and all that, and, you know, we talk about him enough, but then you make these crushing mistakes. And, again, that's on him, but it's also on what are you doing with these guys? Why are you – I mean, you are paid a lot of money to get the best of them, put them in position for success. And, again, the talent level of this offense and then the results, how could that not be coaching?
Yeah. And as you go back to when Jeremy Pruitt was hired and think back to what the program was like, given the mess that was Butch Jones's last year, and then on top of that, the mess that was the coaching search that went along with it. Once Jeremy Pruitt got hired, if I were to have asked you then, what's the timeline for Pruitt where you want to see some substantial progress, what would your answer have been? And by substantial
progress, I mean
competing again in the SEC East.
Yeah. I would have said, like, you would love to see certainly a step forward this year, but actually being able to contend, I think you'd say, like, year four, year five. You hope that.
I think it's fair.
You know? And it's not trending that way. But it's also like this year, like there are issues, and it's not an excuse because it's not exclusive to them. But like you mentioned those games, you don't have those non-conference games where you look at people and work on some stuff. Hey, let's also remember let's remember the Georgia State game when he decided, let's just work on stuff and tinker a bunch of different lineups. And it's like, oh crap, we lost.
We're going to lose.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can point to. And now it's funny, too, how we're looking at his winning streak, because when they were in, it's like, okay, they got – and then now it's like, yeah, there's no good teams in there, you know. But I still think there was a lot of good in that. Yeah. I really do. And you have to take that into account, too. But, look, he's got a very tough job now to turn it around. And signing day is going to be very interesting. You know, I mean, that's a big thing. They've got some big time players committed for this class. I mean, it's a very good class. Problem with that also is in this league, it's still not cream of the crop.
It's fifth right now.
It's cream of the crop compared to 95% of college football programs. Yeah. But in this league, that's still not cream of the crop.
Yeah, right now, with the decommitments they had, I think they've dropped to 13th in 2021's class to rivals. That's fifth in the SEC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's
good. Which is
good. It's not going to help you all that much with Alabama and Georgia and Florida.
If you have evaluated those players well, and if you develop them well, and these are two areas where Butch Jones was not good enough, and I think Jeremy Pruitt is better than him, then that you stack classes like that, then you should be able to do what you just said, compete. But then you got to coach them better.
Yeah, that's the main thing. And so far, the evidence is not really there for that. He's got a lot of work to do to close out this regular season. I know two of the three games that they've got left on the schedule, they're probably going to get trounced, but you got to find a way to try to be more competitive, and you have to beat Vanderbilt, especially now with Derek Mason out. Like, you've got to beat Vanderbilt. So a really important stretch coming up for Jeremy Pruitt. We'll get your reaction as well. How much time should Jeremy Pruitt have left at Tennessee to prove that he's the guy? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And also, should there be a quarterback change for this game on Saturday against Florida? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking Vols, and an interesting decision coming up this weekend for Jeremy Pruitt and this coaching staff going up against Florida. Now, the line still right now at 17.5 for Tennessee, or for Florida in this game against Tennessee, which I would expect to continue to go up as the week goes along. It hadn't moved yet, but I would expect it to go up at some point. Florida's offense, pretty incredible. Kyle Pitts has been unstoppable. Kyle Trask has been unstoppable. So Tennessee they're going to have to score a lot of points just to stay in this game against Florida, and we've seen it with Garantano at the helm. It's just, it hasn't happened. I mean, they've really struggled to score points offensively.
Like, it's a trial to get to 17 every week, and you're going to need to get to 35 in this game just to hang around with Florida. I've said it for weeks, but I especially believe it this week. You got to go with Harrison Bailey. He's had time to practice now. That was the big excuse earlier in the season of, well, he hadn't had practice time, hadn't had time to learn the playbook. With as many off weeks and as many practices as they've had as of late to get him ready, if he's not somewhat ready by now, I don't know what this coaching staff is doing. So, to me, this is a Harrison Bailey game. You've got to at least see if you've got more potential with him to put up some points on offense, because I think we know what it is with Garantano, and it could be worse with Bailey in his first start. I don't know. But I think you've at least got to have that possibility there to get more explosiveness out of your offense, because right now, what we've seen, I mean, it's just not going to come anywhere close to cutting it against Florida. And you're not going to win this game, but you also don't want to get absolutely embarrassed either.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, it's – I think that the whole quarterback thing, had the schedule not changed, you know, I thought it was interesting from the perspective of Jerry Pruitt thinking like, okay, who gives me my best chance to beat Vanderbilt? And like basically just be a veteran, hand off, and not make the key mistake. Great argument against Garantano is that he does make the key mistake, but I still think it would have been an interesting choice. It's not anymore. It's not an interesting choice anymore. I don't think there is a choice. I think the choice is Harrison Bailey and everything you can pour into Harrison Bailey and give him a shot, because whether it's, you know, receiver running a bad route or whatever you want to, you know, offensive line not protecting on some of those turnovers, hey, man, at some point you got to see someone else in there. And there is something to the idea of just give somebody something that they want to watch right now. They don't want to watch Garantano. I'm sorry. And that's not the first thing a coach thinks about, but I would think that if I were Jeremy Pruitt and that staff, I'd want to see somebody different too. I'd want to see what he can do, because sometimes practice translates to the field, but some people are still they're better in games, and I think you've just got to give him every rep, every single chance to perform in this game and the rest of the year.
And I think we may have gotten a little nugget yesterday, and we talked to Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville, and there is a quarterback in quarantine right now, technically, with contact tracing. And there is a lot of talk in Knoxville that it's Jared Garantano. Now, obviously, we don't know that, and there's not going to be a way for us to really know that until we get to the game on Saturday. But if that's the case, and he's not able to practice all week, it would be, I think, very difficult for him to go out there and just play on Saturday without having practiced all week. And we may have gotten a little nugget yesterday from Josh Palmer. This coming from Trey Wallace of Fox Sports Knoxville. Palmer was talking about Bailey. Said he's calm, cool, and collected. I feel like we have a really good game plan for him heading into this game. So a lot of Tennessee fans took that, ran with it, as Tennessee fans do, and just connected the dots that he's starting this week against Florida.
Well, they're probably right.
They probably are.
That's what I love. I love when little hints sneak out like that. It makes sense. I mean, you have to do it. You know, and like you said, Robbie, they're not going to win the game. And, you know, it may not go well, but give people something that they want to watch. And this is it. I mean, Harrison Bailey is basically it right now. And, look, I think that Florida's offense is probably going to do whatever it wants to do, which is also a big disappointment. It's more about Florida. They're great. Trask is great. Pitts is ridiculous. Tony, they're loaded. But Florida's defense is not great.
No.
And Tennessee, in theory, should be able to have success. The problem is we just haven't seen – we've seen stretches where they do look good up front. I mean, think about the Alabama game. I mean, Garantano had all day to throw in that whole game, right? The offensive line is good. They haven't been able to translate that into production, but maybe one of these days it'll happen, maybe with a different quarterback.
Well, and we've talked about Jim Chaney a lot this year. To me, if Bailey's in, this is a pretty important stretch for Jim Chaney, because I think if things go well offensively with Bailey in there, you could just say if you're Chaney, well, it was Garantano. Like, I couldn't do things with Garantano, and I got my guy in there, and all of a sudden the offense looked better. If Bailey comes in there and the play calling is just a disaster and it's just not going well offensively, the noise on Jim Chaney is just going to get louder and louder as they approach the offseason. And Adam Rittenberg wrote a piece on ESPN Plus talking about maybe some assistance in danger, and basically was talking about this is probably going to be Jim Chaney's last season. Tennessee's offense has been atrocious, and he quoted an SEC assistant that said, quote, they're terrible on offense. It's brutal to watch. It's all about that one spot, which is quarterback, that's just so bad. So if I'm Jim Chaney and you change the quarterback and Bailey comes in and you can start to do some things offensively, that's what I point to and say, all right, we've got something to build on here heading into next season. If Bailey comes in, and I know it's a lot to ask, and he's a freshman, but if he comes in and it's still an absolute disaster offensively, I don't really see any way that Jim Chaney's back next year.
Jim Chaney taking a pay cut yet?
I haven't heard it.
Yeah,
getting paid all that money. Did anybody follow up on that?
No, I mean, basically, last we heard it was Pruitt like, well, that story's not over yet, but boy, Jim Chaney, like with all that attention on it, he just quietly, just whatever. I think he's misplayed that, but I think he's done a lot of things poorly this year, and I agree. I think it's really hard to see him here next year. Maybe you're right. Maybe if they have some really good games and Bailey looks really good, then you could spin it that way.
That's the only thing I could point to, because I don't know if you want to go down the rabbit hole of firing an offensive coordinator and bringing in another guy when the other guy knows, like, this could be one and done.
Yeah.
So, look, I get it. Jim Chaney's been awful, and I would not be sad to see him go. But I also understand that if he goes, your options on what you're going to be able to bring in pretty limited, to the point where they'll probably just be like, hey, T. Martin, you're offensive coordinator. Like, that's probably what they'll do.
Could be.
Would be my guess.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's a hard thing. When a coaching staff is clearly under fire and not lame duck, some people would probably call Pruitt lame duck next year, but that wouldn't be true, but they would be certainly under a lot of pressure. That is not attractive for the successful OC to come into that. Now, the money could be attractive and all that, but that's a hard sell. So that's a good point. I think T. Martin probably gets that job. But something's got to change. You look at the whole operation, and I do think back. I think back to the Georgia fans. In fact, I remember when they hired Jim Chaney, a lot of back and forth with Georgia fans. Because I wrote the column like, that's a great hire. That's big time. That's big time for them to get Jim Chaney. And Georgia fans are like, please take him. I'm like, yeah. Fans always rip the OC. The OC sucks. But this has not been an impressive stretch for Jim Chaney.
No, and I almost wonder if the way college football is played right now has left him behind. Like, even at Georgia. Jake Fromm was good. I mean, that Georgia, they're just more talented than most teams they played against, but the way they run their offense right now, and the way I think Jeremy Pruitt wants to run the offense, I don't know if that's the best way to win right now in college football.
Yeah, Ubbin wrote a piece about that this week at The Athletic about basically that idea. And, I think it's valid. I also think we've seen, not in the too distant past, now Alabama has changed, but like, they still, like, power football works for them, right?
Yeah.
Now, you got to have those guys. Stanford, it has worked for them. Although Stanford is kind of an example, too, of a few years ago. It was, they were taking on Oregon and just running all over them with that power football, and now it's not going so well for Stanford. I think it's a fair thing. It's crazy to think, this is also a how old I am moment, but thinking back to Jim Chaney as Purdue's OC when I covered Michigan State, and he was like the cutting edge guy.
Yeah.
People were like, what is this, bubble screen? What is a bubble screen? I mean, seriously, like, Jim Chaney's like the guy who invented the bubble. He may not be actually that guy, but I swear to you, Purdue was running bubble screens in the late 90s in the Big Ten, and people were like, what is this? That's brilliant. You're throwing it right to a receiver, and it's like a running play, you know?
Well, the Big Ten usually is about 15 years behind nice offensive football.
Yeah. Well, they were cutting edge then.
Yeah.
At least Purdue was. Drew Brees. It helps to have Drew Brees, too.
Not a bad guy to have on your side. When we come back, a big week coming up for MTSU. MTSU Athletics Director Chris Massaro will join us on the other side. But first, I got a word from FanDuel, and you're watching games all over the place this weekend. You see another ad for FanDuel Sportsbook, and you think to yourself, is that legal?
here in Tennessee? Well, you bet it is. FanDuel Sportsbook is now legal in Tennessee, and you can place your first bet on FanDuel Sportsbook risk-free and get up to $1,000 back if you don't win. Seriously, no strings attached. Just place any bet you want, and if you win, you keep the cash. If you lose, you'll get your entire bet up to $1,000 back in bonus site credit so you can take another shot at the end zone on the house. And we've talked about the Tennessee and Florida game. Florida minus 17.5 right now heading into this game. If you've seen that Florida offense, that is a very tempting line for you to get in on. And if you do that with the FanDuel Sportsbook app, generous risk-free bets are just the beginning. They've got a simple app, live betting on every game, and exhilarating bet types such as same-game parlays where you combine multiple bets from one game into a single parlay. And once you win on FanDuel Sportsbook, they get you your winnings in as little as 24 hours. That's been one of the best parts about it for me. So to claim your risk-free bet, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and be sure to sign up with promo code ROB, that's R-O-B, so they know that I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 7 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.